to the Social Expedition. Fueling your digitally social experience. Produced by LunaWeb, this is show number 40, August 5th, 2010.
And welcome back.
Welcome back.
So as you may or may not know, we actually record usually the show on a Wednesday, and it actually gets released to the public on Thursday.
We cheat a little.
So with that being the case, we're actually kind of getting back into the offices today from the Social Expedition breakfast this morning.
Which was great.
It was great.
Good turnout.
It was great turnout. I wish they had a little more air conditioning today, but I think that's kind of the case for all over Memphis right now. And I really enjoyed Elizabeth's, that battle cry, that challenge for everybody in Memphis to find one band and just kind of support them, even just a little bit. I think that's really key. I like that idea.
Whether it's liking their page on Facebook, streaming their music through Bandcamp, which is a service where bands can offer free music, actually, for streaming, and even for download in exchange for an email address. So that's a great way for them to connect with their fans and for their fans to get some free music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We actually got a little video snippet of her on that point, and so we're going to attach that to this also.
We're going
to
attach that everywhere.
Yeah. So that'll be good. So if you missed the breakfast, yeah, you missed it. It was a good one. And we hope to see you next month.
September 1st.
Oh, is it September 1st?
It is September 1st.
9-1.
And our guest is not 100% confirmed.
But if things work out, it'll be Chris O'Connor.
Yes.
And he will be talking to us about many things related to video.
He's got a great entrepreneurial business that he's started up, and so that'll be a good talk as well.
Yeah. So onto the news bits and social media and stuff like that. I'm Dave Barger.
I'm Ansley Phones.
And we are, of course, we spend our days here at LunaWeb doing web type things, which increasingly include social media related topics. So this is the Social Expedition, and with this, we don't have a general theme today, just kind of what's going on, some headlines that are out there. Well, we're going to have Natalie Fonseca join us from Seattle via
Google Voice.
Yeah, Google Voice. So we'll be recording that later, using Google Voice to put it onto an MP3, which then Ansley will be taking and integrating into the podcast.
With my mad skills.
Magic. So that'll all be coming together. And of course, I'm going to be able to see Natalie at the PI 2010 conference, which occurs during Seattle Geek Week.
That's like 2 weeks, isn't it?
Yeah, 2 weeks from yesterday. And the big topics that are there at this particular conference are all centered around privacy, in that the definition of privacy is changing, and what companies need to be doing about privacy, what some standards ought to be, and of course, you know, maybe what our legislators need to be thinking of with regard to privacy. Actually laying some rules on the table, because we're kind of entering some new spaces where we don't have rules yet. And so some of those need to be made.
It's almost shocking how much time people spend on social networks and how much sway websites like Facebook and Twitter are having now, and yet there's so little regulation on them. There's so hardly any legislation, mm-hmm. and yet these are such forces in our society now. It's almost scary, like this little period of time, because of course legislation will come. It's on its way. But we're living in this crazy period of time where social media is here, and it is strong, and no one is governing it.
Yeah. And unfortunately, like almost like traffic lights. You don't get a traffic light put up in an intersection somewhere until there's been a few accidents and some people have been hurt,
right.
Sometimes severely. So unfortunately, that's the case. Hopefully some of this can be headed off at the pass before, you know, some major stuff happens, but we'll see. We'll see how this goes.
So we'll cut into that interview here in a little bit, but yeah. Here are some quick social media updates, just a quick run-through of Twitter has hit 20 billion tweets this week, and that's exciting for them. Android has outsold BlackBerry and the iPhone in quarter two of this year.
Now, on that note there, we got to make note of the fact that the Android platform, that operating system, is available on multiple phones.
Well, yeah. You know? I mean, and on multiple carriers as well. So
yeah.
It's got an advantage there, but you know the iPhone is a strong seller.
Mm-hmm. So it's on a very limited platform as far as the devices that you'll find the OS on. But with the deal with Android, that being Google doesn't have, or they abandoned their phone. So luckily they're kind of sticking to this operating system, mm-hmm. the software side of things, to work on multiple devices with multiple carriers, like your point was there. And so that's good. And then we have all these developers. It's a whole lot more open, which is nice, but it also has its hazards as far as people putting spyware or various malware type things inside of applications in Android.
Our good friend Aaron Prather at the breakfast this morning asked me if I'd gotten the virus on my Android. Apparently there was an app, and I looked for some information on this, and I could not find any. So Aaron, if you are listening in, please leave us a comment with some information on that Android malfunction that you heard of. He said there was an app that was giving everyone spyware on their phones.
Yeah.
I couldn't find anything about it, but
it was something like an app for the background on the home screen, or widget there on your home screen, which I think you've got one. So you might want to check it out.
Uh-oh. Hey, yeah. I just downloaded an update for my Launcher Pro, which is my alternate home screen. Uh-oh.
Yeah. So anyway, so there is some information out there. So we need to find that out and attach a link to the post. So when you do have open things like that, where it's great for developers and that type of thing, of course you do have these brilliant people, unfortunately on the wrong side of the fence, making malicious software, which is also one of the things that's going to run into with the iPhone, now that it's okay to jailbreak it and that you mm-hmm. can, that you have the right to. And obviously as a manufacturer, they say, the warranty is null and void if you do this. Okay, so what? But when you have that openness, you do run the risk of, finding things piggybacking on things, Trojans sneaking in and getting into your system and doing who knows what.
Well, moving along right here, we've got Google has added multiple account sign-ins, and I haven't gotten to play with that yet because it hasn't shown up on my settings.
Do you have multiple accounts?
I do, but, more for, as an employee of LunaWeb, very often had to sign into, our analytics Google account and, also our AdWords Google account. We've got different Google accounts for all of these things, and I constantly mm-hmm. find that I'm signing in and out of Google accounts, and that would be convenient for me.
other than people who work in agency type settings like ourselves, or say independent consultants, the other reason I've seen people have multiple Google accounts is so they can have kind of a trash Gmail account, so when they go sign up on various things, that email address they provide just kind of goes to their trash Gmail account.
Oh, that's my AOL account.
Oh, you use AOL for that.
AOL for that. Twitter is revamping their data center, and so they're hoping to be able to retire the fail whale, which would be awesome because I've seen way too much of that whale.
Now, when you're talking about retire the fail whale, we're just talking about so that there's never any issues and the fail whale won't, they're not going to take it away and replace it with a hawk or something.
Yeah, people won't see it anymore because they won't have to because their data center will actually be able to handle their data.
Yeah. You know who else is beefing up their data center? Is Facebook. In fact, they're not finished with the data center that they're already building, and they're already saying they're going to double it.
Hmm.
Very interesting. Yeah, which is good, to be able to handle all the traffic, because, when you have, what was it, 1/12 of the planet,
Yeah. Well, and when they redo their search, that's just going to explode their data usage. Let's see, what else? We've got radio or radio? I'm not sure.
I'd say it's probably radio.
Radio? It's RDIO.
They couldn't 2.0 it all the way and take out all the vowels, or it would just be RD.
RD.
Yeah.
It's a social media music site, and it is a premium site. So it's $10 for unlimited web and mobile use and $5 for web only use.
That's a month.
A month, yes. Yeah. And it's streaming music, and it's kind of the same concept as Pandora, where you get playlists that kind of form themselves based on some preferences, but it's not your preferences and your music history, it's your friends' music history. So it's much more social in that aspect, that you're listening to music your friends like to listen to. Now, I guess you and I probably wouldn't be friends on that site. No, I'm sure we listen to a lot of... I love the Rolling Stones, so I bet we could be friends.
But let's say we had very different tastes in music that we would not want to be friends.
I guess not.
Because then that crazy stuff you listen to would show up on...
Maybe I can block, ears. Influence from you on my station and still be friends with you.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten to play with it. It just opened, I believe, yesterday for the U.S. and Canada.
You know what? I'm quite happy with Pandora.
I love Pandora. And it's free. Mm-hmm. And it streams to my phone, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, so then, hey, there's this GeoToco.
And this is an exciting new tool for businesses who are breaking into the geolocation area. There have been a lot of programs recently that have amalgamated your check-ins. So if you're a user of Foursquare and Gowalla, you can check in at some of these platforms and it will shoot it to all of the platforms. But there's been nothing for brands, for companies who have presences on these websites to monitor their marketing efforts on these geolocation services all in one place. And Geotoko, that's G-E-O-T-O-K-O, is a website for that. So you can monitor your presences on Gowalla, Foursquare, Yelp, Brightkite, Looped, and even Twitter. You can manage what prizes you give out, if you've got items that you give out in Gowalla or badges that you give out in Foursquare, whatever you're giving your mayor or people who check in a certain amount of times. All of that can be managed from Geotoko all in one place. And your Yelp, you know, you manage reviews and things like that. So.
You know, with a name like Geotoko, I kind of picture Cheech and Chong kind of doing, you know, being their spokespeople.
I don't know.
People having fun with the whole
Toko. I picture like thing. Little anime characters.
Really. And it's amazing how the generation affects you know, their perspective on things. But speaking of checking in, let's check in with Natalie.
Well, welcome Natalie Fonseca, the co-founder and an executive producer of PII 2010.
Hi.
Hey, so hey. Welcome to the Social Expedition.
Thank you.
It's much quieter than the last time that we talked on the floor there of the trade show over at South by Southwest.
Yes, it is, and it's hard to believe how many months has passed. I know.
Are you guys going to be back there again with
We do want to go back. It was the first time that we actually had exhibited at a conference. Producing a conference and exhibiting at a conference, usually those two things don't go together. But we do want to go back because we enjoyed just the experience personally going to South by Southwest after so many years being in the business of producing technology conferences. It was actually the first time I'd ever gone to the show. And the opportunity to exhibit allowed us to kind of be in one place and meet a lot of different people. So if anyone's thinking about exhibiting, I recommend it because it was just an interesting vantage point. You know, and we were there because we had just started the concept for the Privacy Identity Innovation Conference that we're going to be doing here in a couple weeks. And we wanted to go and just talk to people and hear what they were thinking about the issues. And that the conversations that we had there on the show floor at South by Southwest helped to shape the agenda. So it was really almost a market research exercise. I mean, part of it was getting the word out that we were doing the conference because it's our first year and we're a small company, and it was a way to reach a lot of people. And the other piece of it was to go and listen and just get feedback. And we had a little survey at the booth. We didn't have anything to show like other companies that are demoing technology. So we brought a couple of netbooks and had some survey questions and just collected information from people. And so it was, you know, it was an interesting way to kind of approach developing the conference. So we want to go back and do something similar next year.
Well, that's great. So things had not solidified completely yet. So you were kind of crowdsourcing, I guess, like you said, the agenda and, I guess, interest at that point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it was, you know, at that point, and when I think, too, like how much has happened just in general, right, in the world and the development of this conference since March, we definitely went to South by Southwest with our initial vision, and I think we are in a different place now in part because of the feedback that we got there. So I think it's like maybe like any product development cycle, if you listen to the people who you want to have, you know, use your product or service, you almost always get something back that you hadn't thought of yourself. So, and not just South by Southwest, but we've also exhibited another conference, Semtech conference, actually in June. And, you know, we have just been talking to a lot of people to get their input because we don't pretend to know exactly what all the issues are. We're just trying to raise the questions that we think people are curious about. So we've really done that by having a lot of different conversations with as many people as possible.
The privacy has been a big headline this year.
Huge.
You know, before March and South by Southwest, and then since then, I think since then it's probably even amplified the conversation about privacy. And if I understand things correctly, PII 2010, you and yourself, you don't have a particular position on privacy. You're more, I guess, a connector of these people to kind of work through some things.
Yes, exactly. I mean, in terms of the conference and what we're trying to do with PII 2010, the goal is to bring together people who are experts in privacy law, in data privacy security, in online identity, technical, legal, academic researchers, people who are spending a lot of time thinking about these issues, and then people who care a lot about these issues, who maybe this isn't their day job, and have them kind of engage in the conversations that we think will be useful. But personally, you know, I'm still trying to figure it out, just like everybody else, I think. And, you know, I have my different identities that I manage in different ways. I use Facebook, like I think a lot of people do, for a more personal relationship with people that I actually know. I know everyone who's my Facebook friend. There are people I'm connected with on LinkedIn that the name's familiar. I've obviously done some type of business with them before. They know who I am, but I don't necessarily have a close relationship with them. And then Twitter, which is actually where I'm the most engaged, there's a lot of people that I've never met, and I don't necessarily even know their real name. So there's just different type of relationships, I think, with the social graph and different comfort levels and sharing information. And then there's all the business implications of, you know, creating companies around how this data is being shared and created. And, you know, there's a lot of big issues. We're just trying to kind of put a spotlight on those and have people who know a lot more about them than I do, certainly, discuss and debate and try and brainstorm and figure out, like, where are we going from here in terms of innovation.
This may be trying to break it down too basic, but I'm kind of picturing, like, okay, a Venn diagram, and you have these different people that you're trying to bring together. Who are in these different bubbles? You know, how would you categorize the different people that need to be a part of the conversation at PII 2010?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, our background in terms of conferences, for the last 4 years, we've been producing this conference called Tech Policy Summit. And as the name suggests, it's about technology policy. And that's been about trying to get people who are involved in the legislative regulatory world, largely in D.C., and people who are involved in the tech industry, both technical people and business people, from Silicon Valley and other areas together. And so there's a community of people that we've met in the course of producing Tech Policy Summit that are lawyers, people who are consumer advocates, and, you know, folks like the EFF and ACLU who have particular positions, Center for Democracy and Technology. There's a lot of companies, obviously, that are looking at privacy issues. And so the privacy community is one piece of it. And then there's another community of folks that have been working and thinking and developing standards and products around the internet identity space. And so there's a real technical community of folks who work on a regular basis in working groups, and there's other events that they go to where they develop ideas about how they can move forward these projects and concepts to try and change the way that online identity works. And those communities, the privacy community and the identity community, occasionally have some folks that live in both worlds. But as I started thinking about this concept last year, started to realize that there are just a lot of different experts who are working in silos and not necessarily communicating with each other. And then there are the innovators who are often at startups, but lots of times they're very, very big companies, and they're working closely on developing specific products and services, and they aren't in either of those camps necessarily. I mean, there's always exceptions of people who would fall into all different areas I'm talking about, but we saw a need and an opportunity in terms of the conference to have a space where these different groups could come together to share and listen to each other and see what the other's working on and where there are areas, like you said, in the Venn diagram where there's overlap and identify the areas where there's not, where, you know, there could be some opportunities to kind of collaborate more. And so the truth is, I have no idea what's going to happen when we bring these people together. But that's the beauty of it. I mean, we've got a pretty eclectic group of speakers, and it's by design. You know, I've done my best with every roundtable that we have to have, you know, this really diverse group of people. There's someone from academia and someone who's a young entrepreneur, and then someone from a large company, someone who's standards expert, and someone who's a policy legal expert. And so there's collections of people that hopefully represent what we mean by PII, privacy identity innovation in each of these conversations. And then there's a few points where it's appropriate to just only talk about identity for a session, you know, only talk about what it means to secure sensitive information. And so there'll be those opportunities too, but the goal of the entire event is to have this collaboration among these different communities as many points in the program as possible.
Excellent. And you have experience in pulling together these diverse groups and sometimes even opposing groups to have these types of discussions before. Is that right?
Yes. I mean, I like to think that that's what I specialize in, is bringing together diverse groups of people when it comes to these issues. And with Pet Policy Summit, that's really what we did do and have done. We're going to be doing the conference again, but that's the value add that we brought to the tech policy space over the last several years. Is we're independent. We're a small company. There's two of us full time, and then we partner with other people as we need to. And we're not lobbyists, and we don't take specific positions on any of the policy issues. And there's a lot of diversity of opinion when you're talking about anything having to do with regulation, not just the political parties, but there's just a lot of different interests involved. And what we have been able to do coming in as this small independent company is really build trust with people that we're not going to take a particular stand. We're going to give everyone an equal chance to have a say, and then let the people who show up and participate and listen and engage as attendees make up their own mind. And so we're trying to use that same formula with PII. We really want to have as many different opinions as possible, because I don't think it really serves any of us if we all sit in the same room and just nod our heads in agreement. So we're hoping to get to the point where we can surface what some of the tensions are so that we can figure out how to actually resolve those and move forward. I think that there's some specific people who will hopefully come out of PII with new business partnerships and kind of intellectual relationships that will hopefully go on to do other things together. And so that's ultimately the outcome that we're looking for. If even one project kind of gets off the ground because of PII, that's kind of how we measure our contribution. So,
yeah, sure. No, that is outstanding. That neutral position that you're able to maintain. I mean, even looking at the website, there's no particular logos that are jumping out yet, because you kind of wonder, looking at it, or at least I did, like, okay, who's behind this? You know, where are we leaning here? Is there somebody who we need to take care of better than others? And it did come off being very neutral. That's very reassuring to know that, okay, I'm getting a straight and level scoop here. I don't have to put on my blinders, to be aware of, certain types of, a certain position being thrown at me. So that was...
Right. I mean, that's our goal. And the one thing I'd say is that we try with not only, who's invited, obviously we want to have as much diversity as possible. And I'll just say, because I definitely have had that question, who are you working for? And trust me when I say nobody but myself. But, who are you working for? What would you really think about this, topic or this company? And our goal in bringing together the different mix of people is to try and be as inclusive as possible.
It's so difficult to find neutral things sometimes, or at least it seems that way. So to know that you guys have got this thing going on is really exciting. What are maybe some of the key issues that you hope, there's some good amount of time spent discussing and chewing on by these different folks?
Well, I think that there are probably a couple of things. I mean, when I said that I don't know myself what's going to happen when we bring all these people together, and I kind of laughed, but it's true. And this is not a new idea, but I think we're going to hear some news about some specific projects that are really getting close to reality instead of just being a theoretical concept of how you, Dave, can control information about you, and instead of all of the things that are known about you online being owned by all these different companies, there would be some other broker, a third party, that you could kind of manage, your own information.
Okay. We had talked earlier about this conference, and it is a very unique way that you have going about to bring these people from different parts of industry together, and academia, and talk about these very broad topics. And I know it kind of finds its own way, apparently, as the conference goes on, these different sessions go on. And you said that also the speakers themselves, they don't have a scripted presentation of 30 PowerPoint slides that they slap on a screen. This is more
right.
All roundtable discussions.
Right. There will be a couple. There'll be maybe two or three keynotes kind of sprinkled throughout where there'll be a reason to show a PowerPoint to speak to a particular topic. But in general, and at Tech Policy Summit, we have a no PowerPoint rule. So we're gonna bend the rule a little bit for a few sessions. But a majority of the sessions at PII are going to be roundtable discussions that are hosted by a journalist. And it's all Q&A format, so we're pretty strict. We don't even want the kind of traditional everyone goes down the panel and introduces themselves. We give information about who the speakers are to the participants in the speaker bios, and then we just want to, like, dive right into the discussion. And something that we're experimenting with is we're asking each of the speakers to come to PII with a question for the participants, for the people who are going to be there as attendees, because my personal opinion, producing conferences, going to a lot of conferences, is that the traditional model of you pay, you go to a conference, you sit down, and you listen to a speaker speak at you leaves a lot to be desired. I think there's another piece of it, and I think instead of always asking speakers questions at the end of their presentations, it would be interesting to have speakers ask you questions. So we're trying to get our heads around what's the best way to introduce that kind of an experiment without completely upending the conference. And so what we came up with is we're going to have the speakers on stage. They'll certainly have the opportunity to share their viewpoints, but each of them is going to have to think about what they think the right kind of question is to put out to everybody in attendance. And we'll talk about it in real time at the conference, and then we're also going to use an online tool to capture all of those questions and have everyone at the conference and potentially other people who aren't at the conference to have a conversation and have their thoughts. And depending on what we find, there's an opportunity, maybe we'll do blog posts, maybe we'll put together a report as a result of what we get out of this kind of question experiment.
You know, there's a lot of conferences these days that are streamed live. And it sounds like, and I think, I don't know if I read this somewhere or maybe you mentioned it, is that going to be going on at the PII 2010?
We are not going to do live streaming. We are going to record, and we will look to put that up on our website after the conference, but we are not going to be doing anything live. There will be obviously people tweeting, and our hashtag is PII 2010, and so we want to have people be able to follow what's happening that way, but we're not going to do live streaming.
Gotcha. Okay. I've got one last question if you have another quick minute.
Sure.
Okay. Where is it during the conference that your passion is being fed? Where's the juice for Natalie that, you know, it's going, oh, this is coming together, and it's all worth it? When does that happen?
Wow, that's a good question. Well, I'll tell you, earlier today, I was working on a piece of the conference that's related to looking at actual companies. You know, they're doing interesting things, and they don't all directly relate to privacy and identity, but I think that where my passion really is in really learning about and working with and meeting entrepreneurs. You know, I consider myself an entrepreneur, and even though what I produce is conferences, not software or you know, gadgets, there's something unique about, like you said, pouring your heart into anything. And I'm pretty excited about some of the companies that are considering coming. This is why we're doing what we're doing, is we really are technology lovers, we're early adopters, and, you know, we really dig entrepreneurs and innovation. So
tell us real quick again, where do we need to find you on the web?
At PII2010.com, so PII2010.com, and I tweet at Tech Policy, and the hashtag for all of the tweets about the conference, it's just PII2010.
Well, Natalie, thank you so much.
All right.
So, hey, that was great. You know, when next week I'm going to be the tourist in Seattle. I'll be assuming that role. And one of the things that I like to bring up about this whole check-in notion is, say, Natalie is a local there. So if I go to Yelp and I see other tourists recommending, I don't know, some seafood place, but I ask Natalie and she says, oh, no, go to Joe's Fish there on Main Street. And she's a local. I'm going to give what she has to say a lot more weight than what I'm reading on Yelp. And this occurred to me the other day, because here in Memphis, we have the same kind of thing with barbecue. I was on Poplar Avenue, driving by Corky's Barbecue, and I see some people out front taking pictures of their relatives or their friends in front of the Corky's Barbecue sign. And so I'm thinking, you know what? I bet you those are tourists. Because when you talk to the locals and you say, hey, where's the great barbecue places to go?
Central.
Corky's is not competing there for the top, you know, no. Two or three.
And neither is the Rendezvous, really, because locals don't want to deal with going downtown and trying to park. And
So that's exactly, that's the point. Like, when you hear this recommendations for establishments, there is a difference between what the locals will tell you and what other tourists will tell you. And I'm kind of looking forward to seeing that play out in this whole Geotoco and these whole location-based services type thing as well. Anyway.
I wonder which would be the first one to kind of pick that up, like sign in as a local, or, you know, if you have a lot of check-ins around the Memphis area, then your check-ins and your tips for Memphis should count more than, you know, if you check in three times at Seattle.
Yeah.
At least your tips should rank higher. It should maybe show up higher. If you check in more in the area.
Yeah. Yeah. Something's going to come out of that.
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
I like that.
All from pictures in the front of the barbecue joint.
But speaking of,
you know, you'd want to ask a question, right? You know, like, hey, where's the best?
My segue wasn't going to be as smooth as that. Good job.
where's a great barbecue place in Memphis? And you post this, you know, out there for your friends to see, and Facebook's kind of added this new questions feature. It's nothing new to the world, but it's Facebook questions now, where you can ask questions and crowdsource, you know, the answers so that these people can answer you. And these questions are not just available to your friends. There are questions that are thrown out there for anybody on Facebook to answer. So we've seen this kind of thing before on other sites. One that I like to have used many times myself is on LinkedIn, because you can ask professionally, you know, related type questions, not so much about barbecue joints, but, you know, hey, what's a good location-based software, you know, service to use for whatever? What's a good application to get for my Android phone? These types of things. So that's been out there on LinkedIn for a while. There's another service out there called Vark, like for aardvark. Like 2 days after I found out about them, Google bought them. So there is questions. Check it out. You may not have it in your Facebook profile yet. This is kind of a very slow rollout. In the first few days of it was very noisy because people were asking silly questions, and so Facebook's kind of coming in and killing the silly questions.
See, I would think that, you know, on Yahoo questions, things like that, the forums there, you see a lot of silly questions and a lot of mean answers. And you would think that the fact that Facebook doesn't offer that anonymity that you can have with Yahoo, that there would be less silly questions and less obnoxious answers.
Yeah.
Are we not finding that to be the case?
Well, they are saying that they are going to monitor this.
Okay.
And delete the obnoxiousness and the silly questions.
I mean, your name has to go on it, right?
Yeah.
Your friends can see that you responded to a question or you asked a question. I mean...
Oh, sure. Exactly. But even though we do know who you are, there can be answers that may not be, you know, they're still suitable for work. They may not be vulgar or anything like that, but they're just silly answers that really don't help with this knowledge base that they're essentially building. And what's neat about these things, and if you've not already seen the same kind of thing inside of LinkedIn, you should go there and check it out, because it's a great place to ask questions and a great place to answer questions. But what you should do first is search for this question, because odds are somebody has already asked the question that you have, and there are already great answers to the question out there by experts. Check it out.
Well, that's all our time today, but we've got the Twilight Camp coming up on August 19th, and that's going to be at 5:30 at Davis Kidd, and unfortunately, Dave will be at PII, so he will not be able to join us for that, but...
And Rachel will be down south, so you're going to be handling that by
yourself. But I'll be there. I'll be there handling everyone. We've got the September 1st breakfast. Dave.
That'll draw a crowd. All right.
We've got the September 1st breakfast, possibly with Chris O'Connor, and we're very excited about that. And if you have any questions that you would like Dave to take to Natalie at PII 2010, please leave them in comments in this blog post, and we'll be sure to get those to her.
Thanks for listening. I look forward to sharing that with you.
Thank you very much.
The Social Expedition podcast is produced at the offices of LunaWeb, a Memphis leader in web development and social media, online at lunaweb.com. LunaWeb is a full-service web agency meeting Memphis's online needs since 1995. Our theme music is The Year Before the War by Eric Maskall, available online at ericmaskall.com. For more information about the Social Expedition, including links mentioned during the podcast, visit socialexpedition.com. Thanks for listening.